Howard here. Welcome to the Marrow Report. The Marrow Report is recorded in front of a live virtual audience on the Duck Pond. Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, live. Mallard.com. M-A-L-L-I-A-R-D.com. One more thing before we start. Let me turn it over to my friend that you may know from Ancient Aliens and the Curse of Oak Island and many other things, Robert Clotworthy.
On the Mallard Report, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on the show are solely those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily of Evergreen Podcasts, KillerPodcast.com, sponsor or affiliate, or any other individual or group. On the Mallard Report, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily of Evergreen Podcasts, KillerPodcast.com, sponsor or affiliate, or any other individual or group.
Good evening, everybody. I hope everybody's Tuesday went... Well, it snowed here, so it probably went better for somebody else than it did for me. We hope. My guest tonight is actor... I want to say a comedian. Is that true?
Or
is
that you just... That was an awkward pause.
I've seen some funny stuff you do, but I don't want to label you if you don't want to be labeled that.
No, I gave up on the whole comedy thing a while ago, and I started as an actor. I got away from it. I came back to it, so... You know, once an actor, always an actor.
So, Shane Dillingham.
Oh, my God, Jim.
Good thing this is live, and I can't go back and just... Toothpaste is out of the tube already.
Yeah.
Take two. How are you doing tonight, besides ready to hang up on
I'm fine, Larry. How are you?
So what got you into the stage performance? Because obviously both of those traits, acting and being a comedian, put you up in front of a crowd. What drew you to that?
Well, I was, as I always tell folks, I was a painfully shy child. I'm talking like panic attacks, run away from school. I hated crowds. I hated the busyness of it. It just sent me into a spiral. And, would often run away from school just out of sheer panic. And it was in grade school, junior high, when they put on a school play, and you don't have a choice of doing it or not doing it. It's like, okay, Jim, you're going to be the tree. I don't want to be the tree. Well, you're the tree. We need a tree, and you're the tree. And I was forced, and I got on stage. And I felt from this mass of the student body support, you know, cheers and laughter and clapping and approval. And it flipped on a dime for me. And I felt like it wasn't me on the stage. It was this person, this character, this thing I was playing on the stage. So I didn't have to be worried because it wasn't me. And it was my first moment of method acting. And it just kind of continued. I found that by acting out, not in a bad way, in a performing way, that I got attention, I got approval. People liked it. And, I ran toward that light.
Well, there you go. What kind of tree were you, I guess, is the... The prodigal question.
I was an Arizona mesquite, but I was the best damn mesquite tree you'd ever seen. I was also in a parade too. I remember I was at this organization that my parents belonged to. They were like, "We're going to have a float in the parade, and it's going to be about Ben Franklin. We're going to have a kite on this this metal." It's not a cord, but like almost like a long metal pole, bendable. And there's a kite on the end of it. And you're going to be Ben Franklin. You're going to stand on the float. I remember my mom and all her friends made the costumes. And that was another moment of going down Main Street in the town that I grew up in. And I was Ben Franklin. And it was just like, this is pretty cool. Look, this is pretty cool looking out at all those people looking at me.
So, now, stupid me here. I'm going to show my stupidity for a minute because... Oh, wait, I've already done that twice now. So
you're like, wait, who is Ben Franklin?
No. I seen on the interweb that you were on the interweb. There's strike free. I'm going to be out here
on the
soon.
Interweb. Now, that's the one with the email, right?
Yeah. that you were born in Europe.
Yeah.
It didn't say where in Europe. It just said born in Europe. And I'm like, Boy, that narrows it down a little bit, doesn't it?
I like that because I put it that way. I was born in Europe because I thought it sounds fancy.
So you're the one that did it. So you're up to the shenanigans.
I was born. My dad was in the military, so I was born in a military hospital in Wiesbaden, at the time West Germany. But after the unification, just Germany.
So did that?
I was the only one of my siblings to be born overseas, so it's kind of cool. I like it.
But that bouncing around probably didn't help your shyness at all, because you didn't have
a peer group that you would. That exemplified it. I mean, it magnified it because I was never. You know, kids are. I don't know if you know this about kids, but they're not forgiving. And you know, if you live in one town and then you move away for a year and then you come back to that same town and then you move away again to another town and then you come back to that same town, they're like, the first time they're forgiving, oh my God, you're back, hi. And then you move again, you come back, and they're like, you're always moving, you're weird. And that's it. And it never gave me an opportunity to put down roots, build those relationships, those friendships that could have possibly lasted a lifetime. You know, the friends I grew up in a small town that the people I went to grade school with were the same people in junior high, were the same people in high school, and those could have been lifelong relationships. But
yet here you are, all the better, or all the better. We'll say that. I'm not going to say you're smarter. Well, at least you won't be after you talk to me tonight, apparently. Yeah. Having one of those nights. So you did the play, and then how did you develop out of that? Because, I mean, I know acting is a lot of skill and part luck, but we're going to talk about skill.
I did plays all through high school, junior high school. And when it was done, I was like, well, I'd like to continue that. So I did community theater, and that graduated into doing semi-professional theater. And I discovered something about myself, and that is I love performing and I hate rehearsing. And theater is a lot of rehearsing. As much as you're on stage performing is as much as you're rehearsing. You know, you're talking, if a show's going to run for 2 months, you're going to rehearse at least 2 months prior. And I don't mean, you know, when I say rehearse, I don't mean once a week. I'm talking 3-4 days a week, you know, 3-5 hours a day. Where at the end you're like, oh my Lord, is this worth it? And so I discovered that I really liked performing, but I really hated rehearsing. And so a lot of people were like, well, why don't you look into improv? And I was like, what is that? And they were like, well, it's, you know, they categorize it as, it's kind of like Saturday Night Live. You know, you just, you perform in little short funny skits. And the nice thing is you make them up. And you make them up as you go. And I was like, well, that doesn't sound like a lot of rehearsal. So I got involved with a sketch group, and then I got involved with I graduated from that into an improv troupe, which was really, really good. I mean, the top actors and performers at the time were involved in that. And a lot of those people were aspiring stand-ups. And so I went down one time to see a friend perform stand-up, and I was like, oh, I think I could do this too. And it just sort of snowballed, and it got to the point where I was headlining as a stand-up. I was touring, headlining clubs as a stand-up, and I had done basically all I thought I could do in that realm. And I just was sort of left empty, you know. I could do it. I could do it backwards. I could do it in my sleep, and it would be. It's kind of like if you're a mechanic and you're a gifted mechanic and you can work on a car in your sleep. You get to the point where you're like, you know what? The last thing I want to do is work on any damn car.
Right. Well, I know my mechanic doesn't work on his own car.
You know, you see people that are painters, Picasso, and you're like, why don't you paint anymore? And you go, and they go, because it bores me. Daniel Day-Lewis is an amazing and Academy Award winning actor, and he quit acting to go be a cobbler, a shoemaker in Italy. And people were like, why? And he said, because I'm bored. There's nothing to this. Everybody gave Marlon Brando a hard time because he's like, I would rather lay on a beach and watch ants crawl around in the sand because acting offers me nothing. There's no challenge in it. And I kind of got that way in stand-up, where I was like, I've done this. I've toured. I've been on television. I've done DVDs. I've done everything, and this offers me nothing. And I had sort of always continued to act, and then I thought, well, I might just look back into that.
Let's pause there. Let's go back to the stand-up days for a minute, because I know I've had some musicians on, and you know, there's the upper level people that everybody thinks about when, especially when I'm talking about musicians. But it's the same with stand-up comedy, I'm sure. You know, the flying private jets and doing the whole bit, right? And then there's the other guys who ride the bus and, you know, grind from city to city.
Yeah,
take me through those days. There had to have been some misadventure somewhere.
Well, there was good times, there were bad times, but then there were a lot of times where it was like, hey, can you come to El Centro on Wednesday and do this show for $75? And at some point you have to go, is this really moving me forward, or am I just grinding it out, making money right now, and this really isn't leading anywhere? You know, a lot of people don't understand that, you know, Steve Martin doing comedy in the 70s, at one point, this man was selling out stadiums, amphitheaters. His last farewell shows were at the Universal Amphitheater. You know who his opening act was for two nights? The Blues Brothers. Belushi and Aykroyd, Blues Brothers. They were his opening act. This man was huge. And he got to a point where he said, I'm now going to do films and I'm going to be an actor. And people were like, they couldn't understand it. And he said, I had done everything that I could and wanted to do in stand-up. And I didn't just want to grind it out again for the next 30 or 40 years, coming out in a white suit, arrow through my head, doing the same stuff. And I can relate. I can relate to why people like, I mean, could you imagine poor Elvis, the Rolling Stones, the Beatles? You write all this new stuff because essentially you're a songwriter and a musician. But every night you come out and they want to hear Hound Dog.
I was going to say.
You're like, you know what? The last thing I want to do is sing that damn song one more time. I want to sing gospel. I want to sing country. I want to do anything. And you become this sort of thing that is just regurgitating the same stuff over and over. And Jim, I saw comics like that. I saw guys that I would perform with in the 2000s. And these guys peaked in the 70s. And there's a guy in front of me doing jokes about Sammy Davis Jr. and Nixon. And I'm like, are you kidding me? He's making John Boy from the Walton references. And I'm like, did you ever update your... No, they don't update their act, because when they find what works, they stick with it. And I always thought stand-up was this. Yeah, they're doing a different act every night. No, that's improv. Stand-up is you develop an act, a 45-minute to an hour-long or whatever act that has been written and rehearsed, and you do that same act over and over and over and over and over again because it pays the bills.
So I can obviously see why you get bored with that, because I do this hour-long show every week, but it's different every week because I bring somebody else on to kind of...
Exactly. Imagine doing the same show every week, Jim, with the same guests, talking about the same thing. You were like, you would say to yourself on about week four, I don't think this is going to work.
Yeah, there'd be, as the joke goes, a silver bullet through it. No.
It's true. It's why guys in the middle of a career of being a lawyer say, I'm going to go be a surfer. And they're like, what? Why? Well, because this was supposed to be my backup job, and I've done this for 30 years, and I'll be honest with you, I'm miserable. I'm not doing what I want to do. So I have the money. I'm in the position where I want to just now do what it is I want to do.
Okay, so now you started to make the transition to be an actor, but I'm sure there were some bumps in the road because, well, there just is with that profession. Just like I said, when we talk to musicians, it's never as smooth as they want it to be. So... The first probably couple of years of trying to make that transition, people were like, what are you doing, right? Why are you doing this?
No,
what are you doing?
No, I was really kind of welcomed into acting because I never really left it. It just that people started seeing me more at acting networking events, film festivals, auditions. They just saw me out more. And the more I was around those people, the more I was like, this is where I want to be. I want to be on a set. I want to be auditioning. I want to be talking about creating characters. This is where I'm happiest.
So when did you flip that switch? You mentioned being around stand-up in the 2000s. So when did that flip?
Probably. Well, I never, you know.
Well, I know you said you never left, but like I said, there's that.
But when I
dove
into it full-time was probably 8 years ago.
Because I noticed you've done a bunch of things in that short period of time.
Oh, I've been hustling, man. I've been hustling.
So that'd be your, obviously, I normally try to bring some advice from somebody, and that'd be your get out there and just do.
Yeah. And you want to be, I realized that I have now 7 agents that represent me across 7 states.
Do you make a dime then? No, I'm just.
Yeah. And it's not for any reason to be like, ha, 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 I have. It's because I know that realistically, each one is only going to contact me once a month for an audition, a self-tape, whatever. And a self-tape, for people who don't know, is that basically you audition at home. You record the lines, the script, the scene they want to see at home, and then you email it back in. It's a wonderful thing because no longer do you have to live in Los Angeles or New York. So, I decided that whatever the agents get me, that's the gravy. Whatever I get on my own, that's the meat and potatoes of my acting. And so I'm out there hustling up, and I make a lot of people on social media mad because actors, you know, and people send me requests all the time. And I'm like, you know who I have on my social media? What little I have of it. I have producers, directors, casting agents, production companies. And what I post 90% of time, 90% of the time are pictures of me on set, a commercial I did, a film I did, a TV show I did. Why? For no other reason that people want to work with an actor that's acting. And I can't tell you how many times somebody has said, hey man, I saw that clip on your Instagram and I loved it. And listen, I got a thing coming up that you would be perfect for. So I thought, I'm not going to sit around and wait for an agent to hopefully send me something that hopefully I land, that hopefully somebody sees me, and that's just too hopeful. That's just too chancy. I'm going to pick up this ball, and I'm going to run with it myself. And if anything happens, it's because I'm going to make it happen.
So how does having an agent work, and how do they get paid? I'm assuming they get
percentage. Yeah, they get a percentage of whatever you make. So if you're not acting, they're not making anything. So it behooves them to send you out and get you cast in a lot of things. And they get anywhere from 10 to 15%, depending on whether it's union or non-union. And that's basically it. You know, there's different agents in different states. You know, they're a nice addition.
And then you're out hustling yourself, so you're kind of competing against your agent, though, in a way?
No, because they're getting things that I'm not privy to. You know, there may be some. I read for the movie with Sam Rockwell and Steve Carell and Christian, what's his name, the guy that played Batman, Christian
Bale.
Bale, the movie Vice. And through Universal Studios, my agent had access to that, not me. You know, they're not going to put that on Facebook.
They're not.
But I see a lot of things, commercials, local commercials, regional commercials, independent films, TV series, TV pilots, web series, things that they don't. You know, an agent sometimes will be like, you know, I could send Jim on this thing, and if he gets it, it pays $4,000, but this thing over here that is, you know, it's an independent film that Jim could work on for 2 days and make $500. Well, that's not enough money to, I'm not, as an agent, not going to make any money off of that. So I'm not going to worry about that.
Right. So, which is good. Is it good for you? Because you're not getting all the reps, so to speak, I guess, for the lack of a better word for it. But
yeah,
it's good for you. I mean, if you're out there hustling for them and you find them, it's good for you.
Yeah, and I'm a greedy slob. I like to work, so I'm pretty much on the norm, doing 4 to 5 projects a month. again, just because I like working, I like acting, I feel like I'm moving forward in that aspect. And I got into this to be a working actor, not to be a movie star. A movie star walks down the red carpet, gets out of a limo, slaps people unnecessarily on stage. That's a movie star. Okay. I wanted to be an actor where somebody was like, you're going to be the creepy guy in this horror film, or you're going to be this old guy who's a fisherman, or you're going to be the mob boss, or that to me, you know, you do that, you can work for the rest of your life. You want to be a movie star? That has a very narrow window. Very narrow.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was thinking about Bill O'Brien, who played the Lincoln in Versus the Zombies. It's a B-rate horror film that this afternoon he's been a guest. And I was thinking about
Bill O'Brien, Bill O'Brien Jr.
Yeah.
Yeah, big fan of his. He's so intelligent and so grounded. And he just has such a good head on his shoulders and the right advice. He, in an interview, they were like, what would you tell people that wanted to come to Hollywood and become an actor? And he just straight out said, don't. Don't. This is a hard way to make a living and a hard endeavor to pursue.
Yeah.
Because essentially you're going to be told no 90% of the time. Why? Because it has nothing to do within your ability. You're too short. You're too tall. You're too fat. You're too thin. You're a man. You're a woman. You're too young. You're too old. Something is always against you. And you're being subjected all the time to that criticism. And you better have a leather thick skin to pursue this.
Yeah. He was a guest on the show a couple years ago. And I used to say, I'm like, you actors, I mean, musicians, I think they seem to have more fun. Maybe that's just me being an outsider who doesn't have any skills above, well, I can't even say talking tonight, but they kind of get that instant feedback and more gratification. But if you're acting on for a movie,
yeah,
there's 10 people in front of you, and none of them are going to jump up and down and start cheering.
Exactly. It's hard. It's harder and more challenging than stand-up, because stand-up requires an audience. Stand-up requires that interaction. Acting does as well. Music doesn't, and I'll tell you why. Because at some point, when we start this song and we're rocking out to Pretty Woman, at some point I can look at Jim, who's on the bass, and I'm on the lead guitar, and the audience doesn't even have to be there. We're just having a good time playing, man. And if the audience wants to applaud afterwards, that's just gravy. Cool.
That's what I'm saying. They have way more fun than either the other realms there.
Yeah, and acting is something where we need feedback. We need, for lack of a better phrase, we need that approval.
So which way is there more pressure? When you're on stage, like doing a live play or production that way, or doing the movie recording where, you know, people are putting money into that? I mean, like every take costs you money.
No, there's more pressure on stage, and I'll tell you why. Because let's say you're the lead, and this is a three-act play. You got 60, 70, 80 pages of dialogue you need to remember. The transitions in this show, the emotional highs, the emotional lows. There's so much. That's a tough challenge, because you've got to remember the dialogue, remember the emotion, remember the cues. Film acting is like, God, somebody said it so great. And that is, and I know I'm going to screw up this phrase or the way they put it, but it's like, stage acting is like doing surgery with a grenade. Film acting is like doing surgery with a laser. You have to be that precise, because when a camera, it's a different medium on stage. I can be very big because I have to be animated so people, you know, 50 rows back can see me. And I can be big and over the top and talk to the back row. But on film, you know, the camera's right in your face. It's a foot away from your face. So just a lifting of your eyebrow can be huge. Blinking can be huge. So you learn to master a whole different medium. And I love it. There's nothing more fun and challenging to me than good film work. And film work, by that I mean film, television, or commercial. Anything with a camera.
So let's talk about commercial, because I think that goes way underrated in the skill set of people's thinking, because you think they're just out of cellular, that Honda Accord.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And if Honda wants to pay for that spot, they can certainly write a check. But anyways.
Right.
So you're doing a commercial. It's got to be spot on because you've got 30 seconds.
Yeah. Well, and they usually with every commercial production, they know exactly what it is they want because they are very detailed in the fact that they have already they've storyboarded everything out. So they have the exact script, if it's 10 lines, if it's 15 lines, and with a storyboard, which looks like a cartoon panel, a comic book panel, they draw out, you know, we're going to see this lady here, then the camera flips. Now this is the second shot, the guy sitting here, medium shot, him from the top of his head to mid-chest. We see a car in the background over his left shoulder. I mean, it is detailed out like a architect's blueprint. So that way, when they get on set, they're like, we know the shots, and we know the shots for every line.
So with all that work going into it, is it harder to produce a advertisement or a movie?
It's harder to do a movie because they never shoot. You know, a commercial will go, okay, first shot is. Movies don't shoot in sequence,
which always has blown my mind, by the way.
Yeah, so you could be going in and. You know, they're like, okay, we're going to shoot the last scene first where everybody dies. And then 3 days from now, we're going to shoot your arrival when everybody shows up. And you're like, okay. So you really have to be a study. You really have to, prior to even stepping on set, you have to have done your homework. You have to make notes all over your script. Whenever I show up with my script, it looks like I've been doodling because I have notes and arrows and underlines and red letters and yellow highlighted and just tons to remind me because this is my go-to. Okay, I'm shooting this scene first. Well, emotionally, this is where I'm at. And now we're going back to the beginning. So now I have to be quiet and stoic because it doesn't build yet. This is the first shot of me. It's not easy, but the best thing you can do as in life is preparation. The best thing you can do is be prepared. Show up and be like, throw me a line and I'll throw my next line back at you. I know the script that well.
So
that well.
I mean, I'm sure there's some stage value to not filming it in order, but is it just based on solely production? I'm trying to figure out why. I mean, I've known they don't film them in order, but is there a rhyme or reason for that?
Well, they may go, we only have access to this location that we've rented for 3 days. So we're only going to be allowed to shoot on this property for 3 days. And then after that, we're going to move, you know, all to, they may want to get all their exterior shots done because the easy stuff, you know, we're filming Breaking Bad and we've got 3 exterior shots for this episode with an RV. And we're going to go film that in between Albuquerque and Santa Fe. But then we're coming back and the rest is just in the studio where we have all the sets already built indoors. Yeah, you'll be here, you know, 12, 14, 16 hours a day, but, you know, at least we're not going to have to be out in the field. So sometimes they'll shoot some of those out of sequence for that reason.
And then I was thinking about my weather.
It's a weather thing. It's a location thing. It's an actor availability. They may go, Bryan Cranston's not available till Wednesday. So we have to film everything else Monday and Tuesday that doesn't need him. There's a lot that falls into it.
I'm sitting here doing some logistics in my head that makes my head hurt. And I promise not to make yours hurt, so we'll keep
it.
I know. But, So Kat Ward says she likes your voice, first and foremost. Oop. Kat Ward from Paranormal Heart, she's a listener to my show. And she likes your voice. And I see you do some voice acting, right?
My voice acting. You know what it is? I played, and by the way, thank you for the compliment. I've done a handful of voice work, and that's just because I think I stink at it. I have tried to be like, hey, at your Honda dealer this week, there's great sales going on. And I just go, I sound ridiculous. I don't have that voice. Now, if you want me to be a mobster going, all right, everybody, at your Honda dealer, here's what's going on this week. I can do that. I can be a character. But I just – luckily, the things that I've done in voice have always been character-y. I fell ass backwards into one because they were like, they're very vague. They won't give you specifics because they want to see what you can bring. And they were like, we're looking for somebody to be an announcer. And they didn't say for what, and they didn't say what kind of announcer. Well, I can only do one announcer, and that's Don Pardo, the announcer from Saturday Night Live. So I was just like, well, hell with it. Well, little did I know, this particular commercial was a voiceover for the Seattle Mariners for the Robinson Cano show, and they were making a commercial that was sort of like the opening of Saturday Night Live, but all the characters were Robinson Cano. So I just went into this, and I was like, live from Scottsdale, it's Saturday night, and just did that. And they were like, oh, well, you know, it just so happened. So I don't know. I did a cartoon. I've done a handful. But the only thing I've learned to do with my voice is I manipulate it depending on the character. This is my normal speaking voice, like this, la, 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 la. But when I get a character like a mob boss or a cowboy or something, I can drop some bass in my voice so I can make it sound a little tougher, a little more intimidating. And people, I can't tell you how many people are like, love your voice. I'm like, thank you. It's not mine. I'm just acting. It's just pretend.
So,
but it's nice. And I tell people all the time, you better learn how to manipulate your voice. Because, you know, if you're the mob boss and you're like, okay, you guys, listen, I'm the boss and I'm getting really tired of this. People are going to go, that's not working. He looks great, but he sounds like an idiot. But if you can learn to manipulate your voice, so the character's like, all right, look, here's the deal, okay? We're going to go in and we're going to take those guys out. So says me. Then people like that. You gotta learn to be a chameleon, my friend.
I just got to work on that look is great because people know I'm an idiot. So we just got to work.
Yep.
That wasn't fair. I just did to that poor guy while he was taking a drink. That wasn't. I did him dirty there. So normally to the show we have some paranormal tones, ghost stories, UFOs. Have you ever seen anything strange out there across the country while you've been out?
I've had some strange occurrences in my personal life that have left me with a big you know, a big question mark where I'm like, wow, that is truly unexplainable. And I have never tried to examine it. I have always left it with a big question mark that leaves a little mystery to it. I bet you'd like to know what now, huh?
Yeah, I was going to say, boy, you just kind of... now I'm trying to figure out, should I be the nice guy and leave it hang? Or
No. And then on episode 2 with Jim.
$14.99, pay to hear the rest of the story. No.
when I was a kid, again, shy, painfully shy, panic attacks, and I think it was that I was very emotional, hence going into being an actor. But I was very emotional, and being emotional, I think you're not just sensitive, you're hypersensitive to things. And as a kid, I had a lot of what people would call deja vu, where I would find myself, you know, in the school library and I'd be like, whoa, wait a minute, I dreamed this. I was here, the same light, you were there, there were people, this was going on, I dreamed this. And I'm telling you, Jim, I had that a lot. I mean, multiple times a week, I would be in situations where I'd be like, whoa, what is going on? What, huh? And there was one time when I was about 9 or 10, I want to guess. And I was on I don't want to brag, but I was on a Greyhound bus. And I was traveling in between somewhere as my family was moving. I was being sent somewhere, coming home from somewhere. And I was sitting next, and I remember this vividly because something like this burns in your memory. I was sitting next to this little Asian man. And who looked like David Lopan, by the way, from Big Trouble in Little China. And I'm sitting next to him, and all of a sudden I got this sort of and this voice feeling premonition said, basically, don't freak out, but somebody on this bus is going to have a heart attack. Almost like preparing me. And not more than 5 seconds later did I hear a girl from the back of the bus behind me go, could somebody help? This guy's having a heart attack. And I turned around and the guy was a double amputee and he was shaking. And she was a nurse, you know, and they pulled the bus over, got him off, got him onto an ambulance. Turned out he was epileptic. He was having an epileptic seizure. But I remember feeling that and hearing it, preparing me for it. And then I heard her go, could somebody help? This guy's having a heart attack. And I remember looking at that little Asian man and I go, I knew this was going to happen. And he just kind of looked at me and smiled. So that always stuck with me. There was another situation where I was driving from Tucson back to Phoenix. And, you know, when you drive on those highways like that, you sometimes you're moving and you don't realize, hey, I'm going 80. And you get into like a little bunch of four cars and you get on the tail of one and you're kind of pushing them like, come on, move, change lanes. Let's go, move. So I'm in this little box of four vehicles, and in the left lane, there's an 18-wheeler, and behind him is a little white four-door right on the bumper of this 18-wheeler. And I'm in the right lane, and we're going 85, 90. And in front of me is a little red pickup truck. And again, feeling, voice, something said to me, and then, I mean, Jim, you want to talk about specific. Something said to me, back off this truck because the hood's going to pop up. And I put my foot off the gas. It coasted back about 50 feet. And I'll be damned if the hood on that red pickup didn't pop up. And it swerved and it pushed over into the 18-wheeler's lane. And the 18-wheeler went, and the car behind him hit its brakes. And I was behind all this. I had backed off, and all I thought was, I wonder if that's because I would have been involved in some pileup. Because the first thing this red truck did was the hood popped up. It swerved back and forth. They hit their brakes, moved over toward the semi, and I thought, I was right on this guy's tail. I was right on this guy's tail. And it was one of those things where I pulled over, and I called my wife, and I was like, I have to get out of the car because my legs are shaking. I can't stand up. I've had a couple of moments like that where you just go, huh.
Now, the other side of that, the fun side, well, I don't want to say the fun side of that, but there's always some of that, right? I'm sure you were in a number of theaters and other places that had a good ghost story. Did you ever see the lady in the back or any of those fun things?
No, never at any particular location. Strange feelings. I was in Tombstone. The actual Tombstone, went into the actual Birdcage Theater, and there was just a feeling there. There's no air conditioning, so the air is very still. It's very thick. It's not moving. But there's some kind of, you know, you feel like an electricity there where you're the hair on your arms is standing up, you know. And it wasn't all the time, but you definitely feel what I would call a presence, something. I had a moment in bed one time that just freaked me out to no end. You know, and you talk about, you know, ghosts and shadow people and all these different things. And I remember one time I was sleeping in bed and I was sleeping on my right side, and I kind of looked up and, you know, I'm kind of blinking, coming to. And it's 3 or 4 in the morning, you know, the witching hour. And I look up and I see what's essentially a black figure, solid black, just standing over me, like leaning over me, like face in my face. And I could see how it was bent over at the waist and just leaning over about a foot from me. And I woke up swinging. And it was just gone. I lay in bed sometimes and I'm like, feels like somebody's messing with my feet constantly, pulling at the sheets, pulling at the blanket, touching my feet. I'm like, what is going on? It's happened so much now that I'm just kind of like, okay.
But well, you have to kind of. Okay. Oh, so I kind of alluded to it, but go ahead and give me the hard sell on you. Where can people find you and some of the more prevalent stuff? And, you know, just promote yourself here for a good minute and a half or whatever.
I don't know, just...
Well, you got a website out there, and...
Yeah, I have a website, johndillingham.com. I have my IMDb, I have Facebook, I have an Instagram, Sean Dillingham Actor, really original. But it's pretty boring. I mean, I just post commercials or movies or TV shows that I've done. And other than that,
Wait. Boring, but it pays your bills, right? And it's something you love to do. So
boring to me. I mean, I would be like, this guy doesn't interact. Or I'm just kind of like, yeah, I don't know. I try not to live in the social media virtual world. I would be like, I'd rather be like, I'm too busy. I'm on a set somewhere. I'm on a set on a film, a TV show, a commercial, working, enjoying life. It's to me like the people that show up at the Grand Canyon and they got their phone out and they're taking videos and pictures of it. And I'm like, why don't you put that away and just take in the moment?
This picture, I could take it in later too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, my God, I see people do that all the time. And they're at the Grand Canyon, or they're at the Great Wall of China, or they're at an amazing concert. And I'm like, you know what this is supposed to be doing? Feeding your soul. And you're not even here because you're looking at that damn phone screen going, I'm going to take a picture of this and post it. I'm going to take a video of it. And I'm like, put that up and just enjoy the moment. Enrich yourself as a person.
Yeah, but I might get 5 likes on Instagram if I post this picture.
Yeah. I think I'm going to post that right now.
Post a picture of you right now, just sitting there.
Yeah.
So, you talked about character development earlier, and that makes me wonder. Any work behind this on the other side of the camera, the backside, working the right?
I've done a couple things. I did a couple. I shot a couple of my own short films. It makes me a better actor to know what goes on the behind the scenes on the other side of the camera. I did a short film called Jason Goes Shopping, and it was about, you know, Friday the 13th, Jason, hockey mask, and me and a couple of friends went into a grocery store like at 11 o'clock at night when they were getting ready to close, and we were like, hey, can we just film this? And they were like, I don't care what you do.
Store closes at 9, do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, they were like, knock yourself out, Spielberg. And so, you know, I had it all storyboarded out. I knew what I wanted every shot to be. Shot in the parking lot, shot in the store. And it was like a little three, four, five minute little short film. You know, Jason goes into the store, shows up, walks down the aisles, finally goes to the hardware department where he finds a machete, goes to the checkout, tries to check out. And the guy's like, yeah, I'm going to need to see a little ID with this. And he hands it to him, and he's like, this doesn't look like you. And he takes up his hockey mask. Oh, my God. Okay, it's you. It's you. And he takes his hockey mask and walks out in a bag with it all dainty and just a stupid idea. Well, I had that out on the internet, the interweb.
There you go.
Probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. And then I got contacted by this guy who said, my name is Tavral, and I'm a musician, an entertainer out of Slovakia. And I was like, where the hell is Slovakia? Come to find out, it's east of Italy. Slovakia. And for some reason, I was watching your short film, playing my latest song, and it went perfectly with it. It matched up perfectly. And I would like to know if I could have the rights to use it as the music video for my song. And I said, sure, thank you for the compliment. I appreciate that. And if, as long as you give me some credit in there. And that thing got played all over Europe. It was on MTV Europe and everything. So
Wait, MTV Europe still plays music?
Yeah, believe it or not. Yeah.
That's breaking news.
There you go. That was it. And I wanted to see what it was like on the other side of the camera to make myself a better actor. To know the views, to know the angles, to know the cameras, the filters, everything, the lenses. Because when I thankfully this happened, when I was 21 and I went on my very first commercial jobs, I had landed it, going to do it. I was told to show up at 11:30 in the morning. And I showed up, and before that I thought, you know, when you're the actor, I mean, this is it. I'm the actor, okay? The actor is here now, sir. We can begin. The magic is here. Because as the actor, I am the most important thing on this set. And I showed up, and these giant hulking men who were there, all the union guys that had been building the sets they were there, they walked up to me and they were like, all right, look, monkey boy, we've been here since 5 this morning building this, and we want to go to lunch. So get your lines right and don't screw up, because we don't want it to be a long day. And I was like, yes, sir. And I realized at that point, I am probably the least important thing here. And it was a good thing that happened, because I have no onus, no attitude, no nothing, because I realized you are but one cog in a giant machine. We are all a team, and we are all trying to achieve the same thing, and that is the director's vision. And if we all get on board and understand that vision and work together, it's going to come to fruition. So that happened when I was young, early on, and it humbled me and it put me in the right place. But everybody's got a job on a set, man. And I was in that Alec Baldwin movie, Rust. And a lot of people, when that tragedy happened, I was contacted by everyone. Jim, you wouldn't believe it. The New York Times, the LA Times, Entertainment Tonight, Access Hollywood. And I kept saying the same thing. I got nothing to say. I got nothing to say. And they wanted to blame Alec Baldwin. And I'm like, I did finally talk about it on one podcast briefly. And I said, let me explain something to you. Do you know what an actor's job is on a set, on a film set, a TV set, a commercial set? Your job is to show up and be pretty and remember your lines. And that's it. I am not a professional gunfighter nor a professional gun handler. If you need anything, there's somebody for your hair. There's somebody for your wardrobe. There's somebody that takes care of your food. There's somebody that drives you. So stop blaming him, because he didn't show up that day and go, I'm going to kill somebody. I'm just going to kill somebody. You know what it is, and this happens in life, and I'm sorry. You have to accept it was an accident. Can accidents be avoided? Sure, to some extent. But sometimes you can't tell when the person in the car next to you doesn't even look and turns into you, and you're like, you just sideswiped me. Oh, I wasn't even thinking. Yeah, no kidding.
Or has their hood fly up?
You know, and I've been on sets where I've been on sets where somebody's like, yeah, that light's not good. Can we move it? And I'm 2 feet from the light, Jim. And I reach over to move. I go, I got it. I'm right here. And a guy goes, hey, don't do that. First of all, that's my job. If you do it, you're taking away my job. Now I'm standing around twiddling my thumbs. Everybody has a job on that set. Everybody. So that's my little spiel.
No, that's a good spiel. And I guess, is it harder to work on bigger budget films then, because you would be taking the guy's job? But if you're on a guy that has $30 to film this thing and you move the light, it's not necessarily as upsetting for somebody.
On a bigger budget, there's more hands involved, there's more people involved, and sometimes that can be a good thing, sometimes that can be a bad thing. On independent films, you know, it's sort of, you liken it to guerrilla filmmaking. You know, they may say, we need you, Jim, to show up at 4 a.m., and you're like, you're kidding. Yeah, no. We got to get that sun when the sun's coming up. And, you know, I know it's an hour drive from your home. And, you know, and then after that, we're going to be off for a couple of hours. And then we're going to meet back around 1. And you got to be much more flexible on those independents. And a major film can be like, you're going to film Monday and Tuesday and then be off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then you're going to come back Saturday. And there's a lot more planning involved. They really have it. I did, I'll tell you how planned they have them sometimes. I did the show Better Call Saul, and I got my call time, and they were like, your call time's at 5:18 a.m. And I go, is somebody screwing with me? Because that's that is very specific. Usually it's rounded off to a half hour.
Yeah, I was going to say, that seems 5:30. Yeah.
I thought somebody was screwing with me. Like, let's just see if he's reading this. 5:18. I'm like, that's very specific. Usually it's 5:30, 6:30. They round it off. Come to find out, that's according to the Screen Actors Guild Union rules. They go by every 6 minutes. They have it down to that tight of a schedule. Your call time is 5:18. Be here by 5:18 or earlier. So you learn new things all the time.
I was going to say, maybe I should start my show at 9:06 just to screw with
people.
Yeah,
we're going at 9:03. I hope you're reading this.
Yeah. Well, let's ask this question because it can be fun. Have you worked with any actors or actresses who thought they were the cat's ass? And do you care to mention any names?
Everybody has been the, you know, when I did Rust, all I thought, I was so scared because I thought Alec Baldwin, oh God, please don't let him be a jerk. Please don't let him be a jerk. You read all these things. He couldn't have been sweeter. We're getting ready to start shooting the day that I'm there, and I'm in this old West town. They got the cameras, the boom, everything ready to rock, and this car comes driving down the main street, and everybody's like, what the hell is this? Who the hell is, what is going on? And the driver's window comes down, and Alec Baldwin pops his head out, and he goes, are you guys making a movie? Can I park here? Is that cool? Can I park here? And everybody was, and he couldn't have been nicer. It couldn't have been sweeter. Nobody that really set out to be purposely. I did Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and Andre Brower, who plays the captain, was super nice, super sweet. I didn't get a chance to talk to Andy Samberg that much because not only is he the star, but he's also the producer. So he was always flanked by two people in his ear talking about God knows what. So he was just like, hey, I'm like three people busy.
I was going to say, this sounds like a headache and a half to me, trying to be the in front and behind. Like, I was asking you about the variation earlier. I can't imagine doing both.
Yeah, nobody that's ever been a jerk. They've all been nice.
Well, but somebody was, well, I have to ask you about this Chris Rock, Will Smith thing again. Because, speaking of jerk, right? Talk to me about how big the Oscars actually are. Because I've always just thought about it as kind of a slap on the back for the...
Yeah,
am I right or am I?
Oh, what a great show! Actors giving actors awards. Okay, you want my perspective as an audience member or as an actor?
Well, give it to me as an actor, probably. Save you some trouble.
my attitude is, I don't act for trophies. I don't care for that. It doesn't matter. As Samuel L. Jackson said, it doesn't move the zeros on my paycheck. So I don't, I think it's incredibly sad where it has gone, because to me, it used to be a night of celebration, celebrating the film, celebrating excellence. There was a bar, a standard, and it was seeing what truly was the best, what really went above and beyond. And now it's quotas. It's marking off the checkboxes. We haven't raised our standards. All we've done is lowered the bar. And I could question you all day about who the best actor was, who the best film was. In my opinion, that's all it comes down to, my opinion. I think what happened is, to a larger extent, representative of what has happened in this country, in this society. In the early 90s, we saw that, my son can't, in the track meet, he never comes in first, second, or third, and it really does a number on him, and I don't like that. So there should be no more first, second, and third. Everybody should get a participation ribbon. And you know what you've done? You've lowered the bar. You've lowered the bar, not pushed people to strive above and beyond. And that's what happened to the Oscars, in my opinion. I don't care for them. I don't watch them. And that breaks my heart, because as a kid, I used to stay up, and the Oscar night, oh my gosh, that was such a big deal for me, to see the red carpet interviews, I'd watch that show from beginning to end.
So let's flip it to the more positive. Have you ever done something red carpet, some kind of big flash event? Oh wait, photography, folks, don't think I'm... No.
Yeah, some film festivals, some film premieres, and it's... that's good for the filmmaker, the director, the maybe the marketing company that's pushing it. It's part of your job. Me personally, I'd rather be in my home, sitting in my easy chair in front of my TV watching something. But it's part of it. You do it because it's part of it. But no. I don't seek it out. Oh, I have to.
You should. Oh, wait, no, I'm just kidding. You'll probably notice that I haven't asked you about very specific projects, because I know you've been involved in a slew of them, but I also know that you're probably working on something this week that'll be coming out in a year and a half or so.
I've done a lot, and it sounds obnoxious, but I'm doing 4 or 5 projects a month now that if you asked me what I did, I'd be like, I just did a couple things, but I can't remember. I shot a commercial. Shot a movie, shot a TV pilot. I'm getting ready to go to Vegas to shoot a film for a couple days with Cuba Gooding Jr. So that's kind of cool.
That's cool.
And then I just got asked.
Show me the money. Oh, yeah,
to go to do a casino commercial. I'm going to start on a web series at the end of the month. And then I just landed a role on some TV show up in Utah. In December, I wrapped on a film with Netflix for Netflix with Lindsay Lohan, just a cast of six of us. So that was kind of a big deal. I had a great role in that. And then that's not coming out till like November, December.
That's what I'm saying. Like you did that last year, and there's such a gap in between
when
it's.
Well, they edit it, and they like to they got to edit it. They have to put a score to it, and they have to they want to market it properly.
Yeah.
So it takes time.
And like, but by the time it gets out, you've done two other things, and it's like, that little project. That was fun.
You know, it's 1990, and you're interviewing Robin Williams about the great work he did on Aladdin. Tell me more. And he's like, I wish I could, but I did the voiceover for that in '85, which is true. He animation's even longer. But and then I'm reading for a couple of roles on this TV show called Waco. And so, yeah, always stuff going on, coming up.
That's good. Keeps you busy, keeps you out of trouble. Well,
every day I'm hustling.
I don't know if it keeps you out of trouble, but keeps me out of trouble.
I try. I'm a very, very boring. Oh, I just shot a commercial for the Arizona Tourism Board.
Oh, so you were there at the Grand Canyon with your phone out taking a picture, right? Yep.
Yeah.
What he was just complaining about is just true.
One of those things where they're like, show up at 5 a.m. because we want to get the sun up because we're going to replace that as the sundown. And I'm like, can't we just shoot it at sundown? I'm more of a 1 to 3 in the afternoon kind of guy. That's when I'm at my peak. I'm not – as much as I've done this, as long as I've done this, you'd think I'd be used to it now. But people go, your call time's at 5. And I go, p.m., right? You mean p.m.?
No, yeah.
A.m.
No.
Great. No. I get up at 5 a.m. I'm like, all right, let's go be glamorous.
Well, hey, if you ever hear somebody looking for a mediocre podcast host that can't stumble over all over their words, I just did it to this poor guy again. I'm going to kill him tonight.
I'm remembering things. I also have a at the Phoenix Film Festival. I have three films in it showing. I'm so proud of that. By Good Rights, Murphy, and Whiskey Sour, and that's getting a lot of attention. And then. I did this TV show, cowboy TV show called Horse Camp. And we did season one of it, and it's on Amazon right now. And I found out that we're shooting season two, and the production's even getting bigger. They're moving it to New Mexico to shoot. So that looks like it's gonna be something. We'll see.
Well, hey, keep after it and stay in touch and do all the good things. And I appreciate you reaching out and saying, hey, you want to be on? Because I'm fascinated, man.
I appreciate being on and you talking with me. I appreciate the opportunity.
And good luck. And when you win that Oscar, come back and talk to me, okay?
Yeah, you won't see me there.
I'll go to accept it for you. How's that
sound? Sean couldn't be here tonight because he said he's done with this shit. So we're going to get this to him.
And Jim Mallard's here to accept it for him tonight. Thank you, motherfucker. Thanks, man. Have a good night.
All right, buddy. Be well.
And... oh, let's see. There you go. I just wanted to take a minute, and there's a lot going on in the world, and need to keep some of the members of the pond in your thoughts tonight. A lot of illness, a lot of stuff going on, and so let's just take a moment and take care of them, take care of each other. That was fun tonight, by the way. I'm glad I did that. I was telling Walks at Night before the show, every once in a while I'll take a flyer on somebody just because I need to get out of the little loop that we're in, and that was awesome tonight, so I hope you all enjoyed it as well. Oh yeah, March is over, guys. Be April before we know it, and then we'll be staring down May, which makes 11 years. Woo. Gotta get booked in May, so be a good time. But until next week, I think we're gonna just keep each other safe and keep each other happy. Talk to you soon.
It's the Mallard Report. Yeah, the Mallard Report.
Hey, I want to thank you for joining us. It's been a good show tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. Take a few moments, subscribe, share, all the fun stuff. You know how to do it. I don't have to tell you. Just be ready for next week. It'll be sooner than you think.
Hit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on!